relationship with China. Coming back to the issue of leverage, there was an interesting story this week about the issue of tourism and the fact that China, in a sense, is maybe punishing Canada. A lot of other countries have signed a kind of a lucrative tourism deal with China. They've not signed one with Canada, which some say is kind of retribution or punishment because Canada has not handed over an individual seen to be, I guess, China's most wanted fugitive. I wanted to get your thoughts on the significance of all that.
Well, I don't know if there's a direct connection between the alleged smuggler, Mr. Lai Changxing, who is currently engaging in appeals against his failed refugee case and the tourism file. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chinese have linked those two together. They really want him back to face justice because he is a symbol of something very, very wrong in the Chinese system. I think his operation bribed something in the order of 600 Chinese officials, and at one time in China, 20-some percent of all the oil in China had been smuggled through his operation. So, you know, that's huge. We're talking about tax evasion of billions of U.S. dollars. And he lives in relative comfort in Vancouver, his source of income since he's been in Canada so long being unclear to us. So, you know, it is a difficult case. But as much as the Canadian government has tried to get Mr. Lai back to China by going through our refugee determination process, he has money, and he's able to buy lawyers. And after his initial refugee case failed, he put in an appeal, and that failed, and now he's putting in another appeal, and he can drag this thing out for quite a while. So, you know, it is an issue. I myself went to Vancouver to testify for the Canadian government against the validity of Mr. Lai's refugee claims, and, you know, that was some years ago, and he's still here. So, but then the question of tourism also relates to our refugee policy, because, as you know, if foreign people land on our soil and claim that they have a valid refugee claim, then they don't have to go back until the claim has been reviewed and the refugee system is grossly overburdened. And so there is some question that because Canada has such protections for our nationals who come here by our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that it could lead to a lot of those Chinese tourists, in fact, using the tourist visa to attempt to remain in Canada permanently, which would lead to another, you know, big problem for Canada. And that may, you know, that may be a factor there in terms of the government decision not to push this as hard as we could. Mm-hmm. But there's no question we're losing a terrific amount of money by not having Chinese tourists all over Banff and Jasper and Prince Edward Island and all these places that our other Asian tourists like to come. And so, you know, the loss of the Canadian economy is significant. And I guess another point about China's development is that, you know, it's 22% of the world's population, and most of them are poor. But even if you've only got, 15% of them who could be considered middle class and might have the resources to send their children to study here in Canada or to come here as tourists, that's already 200 million people. Well, you know, it's a significant market that's growing and growing, and so if Canada can't get in there and make the most of it, our economy will suffer relative to others.
Just got about a minute left, and maybe this does speak to China's place in the world and where it might be 20, 30 years from now, and whether it'll be a democratic country. The issue of democracy came up, I suppose, with the death this week of the former prime minister, sort of seen as at least sympathetic to democracy, and how the Chinese have reacted to it. Your thoughts on the significance of that death and whether democracy can take root there?
Well, you know, you read a lot about Zhao Ziyang, who was the prime minister in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's bear in mind that he was the prime minister of the Chinese Communist Party in the 80s. And so the claims that he actually supported rule of law and elections are not really, aren't really borne out by what he did when he was prime minister. But he did, I think, see the Tiananmen student incident as supportive of his faction within the party, and so he was purged because he didn't support the crackdown. And whether China will become democratic in 30 years or not, I certainly hope so. But, you know, China's been engaging in openness and reform for a long time, and they do have elections at the village level, and they've had those for 15 years, and we don't see any expansion any higher. And so I would be, you know, I think I couldn't really predict that the direction the Chinese political system is going to take. I think for the most part, people in China are quite happy with their government so long as they continue to see the benefits of their lives improving year by year. And for, you know, a large number of Chinese, that has been so. As you get those 7% growth rates year by year by year, people really see that their lives are better, and that makes them feel that their government must be doing something good.
Well, we'll leave it there. We're out of time, Dr. Burton. Appreciate your time here today. Thanks for this.
Nice to talk to you.
All right, Dr. Charles Burton at Brock University. Some open line time when we come back. It's Rob Breckenridge. We're back after this.
CHQR, your source for Calgary's most comprehensive traffic information. No Calgary radio station chooses to provide its listeners with the number of traffic reports that we do. Six times...